Collins. All right, item four. Presentation from Segal Consulting on actuarial funding and contribution volatility management. This is a presentation item. Good morning. Yeah, pull those.
Pull them in, yes.
We'll all hear you better.
Very good.
Great.
So we go straight into it.
Absolutely.
Well, good morning. Yes, sir. Good morning. My name is Todd Tauzer, joined by my colleague, Eva Yim. We are actuaries from Segal. And so today we have a couple items in front of the board. And the first one here, as you can see, is an actual presentation. And this is the title is Funding and Contribution Volatility Management. And the idea behind this is in the last few years, there's been, really the last couple years, there's been an emerging, what we call an emerging best practice in the actuarial community, which is a lot of plans for the last 10 to 15 years have really put their head down and worked towards funding, you know, getting past the global financial crisis with new unfunded liabilities, quite a bit of an assumption changes along the way, so kind of getting through the grind, higher contribution rates, and working towards fully funding the plan. But now at this point, we're starting to see some plans get closer to 100% funded. We're starting to see some old unfunded liability layers be fully amortized, fully paid off. We're starting to see contribution rates drop. And so it's not like everything is done in terms of the funding of the plan, but we're starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel. And so the question is, well, how do we prepare for that? As we work towards full funding, do we just take it all in stride as the current funding policies allow and just move forward? Or are there ways to build some risk mitigation and risk management into the plan as we work towards full funding, as we see the contribution rates starting to decline in the near future? And so that's the idea behind this. We'll get into the details of what we're talking about, but I just wanted to give a little bit of an overview about why we're bringing this and why we're bringing it right now. And in particular, as you'll see with our plan, we have a couple years of very stable unfunded liability contribution rates, and then they drop pretty dramatically over the next couple years after that, which is not a bad thing. It means that we're paying off unfunded liability and the rates are going down. But there's different ways to approach such a drop. We sometimes call it a contribution rate cliff, where the contribution rate just drops all in 1 year, all in a couple years. And there may be a better way to approach that. So that's the discussion for today. By way of short review, we already have a funding policy here at Contra Costa, one of your board policies. And within that funding policy, it addresses three primary things. First of all, there's an actuarial cost method. That cost method says, all right, if we're funding the benefit of each individual member for their retirement, how much do we fund in year one of their active career? How much in year two? How much in year five? How much in year 10? So how do we spread out the cost to fund their benefit over their active career? That's the cost method. The second method that we employ is called an asset smoothing method, which most of the board is familiar with, basically because the market value of assets can jump all over the place and we don't want to feed that volatility right into the contribution rates. We take any gains and losses from the market value of assets and we recognize them over a five-year period of time instead of all at once. And so that allows the ups and downs to largely offset one another because we're smoothing them all out. So that's the asset smoothing method. And then the amortization method is, well, if we have unfunded liability, how do we pay it off? How do we pay that off over time? We set an unfunded liability contribution rate that's added to the normal cost payment in order to make sure we're fully funding the plan over time. So those are the three funding policies we currently have. And this next slide is very similar. It's just saying specifically for Contra Costa, what do we have here in terms of it? So we use entry age as the cost method, which is used by over 95% of plans, public plans in the United States. So very standard is how we, entry age is how we spread out the cost across the member's working career. The asset smoothing method, as I mentioned, is we look at it semi-annually, but it's really over a five-year period of time that we smooth out any gains and losses. So that's what I mentioned for asset smoothing. And then on amortization, specifically, when we see any new unfunded liability come into the plan, we amortize it over an 18-year period. And then if next year there's new unfunded liability, we amortize that separately over 18 years. So that's called layered amortization. Each time it comes in, we deal with it separately, we pay it off over 18 years, and then it's fully eliminated and gone. So in the olden days, there's something called rolling amortization, which meant we refinanced every year. So if it was 18 years this year, instead of going down to 17 next year, go back up to 18. We don't do any of that here. We actually pay down the unfunded liability. We work towards full funding. And that's why we're in the good position today where we can start talking about contribution rate decreases and getting closer to full funding. The final part about amortization is for Contra Costa, if we have any surplus, first of all, PEPRA says you can't amortize any surplus as a credit against the normal cost. last year at least 120% funded. So they have a threshold above 100% where you can't amortize any surplus as a credit towards the contribution. But over 120% and a couple other things are met, then you can amortize it, and we do it over a long period. We don't grab it all at once and use it up. We amortize that over 30 years. So that's already, this is all review. This is already built into your funding policy, just as background. All right, so now we're going to go into considerations, and we've entitled this chart or this slide surplus management, but it's really even in preparation for surplus. It's not just once you get to surplus, here's what you do. It's how can you prepare as you're working towards surplus. And the idea behind this is that we can establish a methodology within the funding policy, those methodologies I just reviewed on the prior slide, to mitigate some volatility going towards surplus. And specifically the second bullet here, which says, avoid large drops in contribution rates that could be followed by significant increases. We don't really want this bouncing effect where the employer sees a large drop and thinks, okay, my contribution rate has gone down. And then, oh, we have an investment loss and it shoots right back up. So there are ways to build some risk management into that and come down more gradually over time and strengthen the funding of the plan. Come down. When I say come down, I'm talking about the contribution rate itself. Bring that contribution rate gradually while strengthening the funding of the plan. So as I mentioned, this is emerging practice. About 2 years ago, there were two papers published. These are actually links. If you want some good bedtime reading, you can grab these links and read them. One was the Government Finance Officers Association published Core Elements of a Funding Policy. They listed, in the previous version of this, they listed the three I've already mentioned, the cost method, the asset smoothing, and the amortization. Now they're publishing a fourth method within the policy that's called surplus management. So they have now put that into suggested elements of a funding policy. The American Academy of Actuaries also published a piece called Surplus Considerations for Public Plans, and that again is working towards surplus, not just once you hit it. And I was actually a co-author on both of these pieces, so I know them quite well. And that's part of what we're discussing here today. This is, again, just background getting into our discussion. So a couple more slides on background, and then we'll get into what we're actually proposing for today. So first of all, why consider this now? We have to answer this question because you'll talk to plans, well, we're only 85% funded. We're not 100% funded. Why are we talking about surplus management? And it's really about this broad perspective of how do we get to that position and what do we do when we get there. And one of the key things for me is when you talk about surplus, it starts with education. Because surplus, you go to a dictionary, you open it up, you find the word surplus, you read it. It says the amount left over after all your obligations have been met. That's actually not true for a pension plan. So it's a bit of a misnomer for a pension plan. When we're 100% funded, which you usually call surplus, or over 100% funded, doesn't mean all our obligations have been met. It means we're on track in the funding of our members' benefits. So we don't have legacy unfunded liabilities. But we still have ongoing normal costs. Members are going to still earn new years of service. And we still have the risks of managing the plan. We have investment volatility. We have a lot of stuff going on that can affect the funding of the plan. So we're certainly, when you hit 100% funded, we're not done. We're on track and we don't have that legacy unfunded liability. So that's an important concept when understanding why we're talking about these things. And the other thing to mention is you look at the turn of the century, when we went into the 21st century, the average plan in the United States was at least 100% funded, believe it or not. And this is a long time ago, 26 years ago, but the average plan was at least 100% funded. And what happened? Most plans went on employer contribution rate holidays. Some gave employee contribution rate holidays. A lot of plans updated benefits, gave new benefit formulas that were stronger, and a lot of plans did it retroactively for past service. So there were a whole bunch of changes that went into effect, thinking, kind of like what I said, that we had free money sitting here on the side with nothing to do with it. And then we had the dot-com bubble burst, and then 5-6 years later after that, or 7 years later, we had the start of the global financial crisis. And then we had all this unfunded liability that we had to deal with. So we don't really want to repeat that same perspective as we had 26 years ago. We want to come into it with a little bit more education and a little more strategy as we work towards full funding again. Hopefully that makes sense. So the bottom half of this page is talking about these two papers. What do they say you should do in considering working towards full funding? The first point is, hey, take a look at your assumptions. Understand if there's risk built into those assumptions and see if you need to do anything about them. I think Contra Costa, your plan here, has done a pretty good job of that. So I don't think we're behind the ball in looking at our assumptions. I think we have pretty strong assumptions even as it is. But that's point one in the papers that we're talking about. Make sure your assumptions are in the right place. It'd be terrible to say, oh, we're full funded 1 year. Oh, no, next year we need to change assumptions, make it more conservative, and you have new unfunded liability again. So you don't really want to get into that kind of a situation. Second is actually what we're going to be primarily focusing on today, which is consider a glide path. Because normally your contribution rate consists of two parts. It's the normal cost piece, and then there's the unfunded liability amortization piece on top of it. When the unfunded liability amortization piece, when you get to full funding, that goes away. And we're just paying normal cost after that, the bottom chunk. So it's saying if your contribution rate is up here and you're going to go to down here, don't do that all right away in 1 year or in a couple years. Consider a glide path where you come down gradually over time in more of a measured fashion. You still want to provide that contribution rate relief for paying off the unfunded liability, but consider doing it over time instead of all at once. That does a couple things. First of all, it helps us if there's any bad effects, if there's a bad investment year, if something happens and the rate's going to bounce back up, you can actually usually just keep the glide path going down. You can do it in a very stable way because you've built in a buffer into the contribution rate. The other thing it does, and this is mentioned more on the next slide, is if we drop contributions a lot all in 1 year, there's something related to the plan called net cash flows. Net cash flows is how much contributions we're taking in versus how much benefit payments we're paying out. For Contra Costa, we're about -1% on cash flows, which means we pay out 1% of our assets every year because we take in less contributions than we pay out in benefit payments. But if the contribution rate is here and it drops down to here, all of a sudden the net cash flows become much more negative. We take less contributions in. We're still paying out more benefit payments over time. And so that means we have to pay more out of our assets every year. And that can actually affect the investment portfolio too, how you might want to strategically invest over time because you need more liquidity as you take in less contributions and pay out more benefit payments. So the glide path also allows time for strategic asset decisions to be implemented and happen without them being rushed and all of that. So it helps even on the investment front as well. So I'm getting ahead of myself because we talk about this more in the next slide. But the last two things here are things we already do at Contra Costa. So as a possible threshold before amortizing any surplus to go below the normal cost, to give credit towards the normal cost. Like I said, PEPR requires 120% before we amortize any surplus to give a credit to the normal cost. And then long amortizations of surplus when we actually do receive a credit, and we use 30 years, which is considered long by actuarial standards. So that's what this slide is saying. We already do those bottom two bullets, but the second half of this slide is what I just mentioned. If we introduce a glide path, it does help create an evolving strategic asset allocation so we can manage our investment allocation better and our cash flows over time. It also creates a buffer for volatility if we see gains and losses, in particular if we see losses that occur to the plan in any given year. So this is all background for the idea of why we'd like to consider something like this, but I want to make it less theoretical and look at what we're actually talking about. So before we look at the specific proposal numbers, we took the plan as a whole. So here is the plan for Contra Costa. And the first line, it's a little bit covered, but the first line is the orange line. It's the baseline. This is a projection of the unfunded liability contribution rate for the plan as a whole. So it starts up at about 14%, as you can see, for a couple years. And then it follows that blue square line down. So it goes down, and after two more years, it drops to about 7%. So it basically gets cut in half in 2 years, which, again, it's not a bad thing that the contribution rate is going down. That means we're paying off unfunded liability. That's a good thing for the plan. But the question is there a more prudent long-term way to bring that contribution rate down? So the suggestion is, you can see with the blue squares here, where there's a glide path, there's a measured approach to bring the contribution rate down in a more stable way. And how you can really see the benefit of this is if we go to the next slide. Here we've modeled out, again, the orange is the baseline. We've modeled what happens if there's an investment loss in the future. We just chose a year in the future, 2033, and we showed a market shock. It's not even a big market shock. Basically, in that year, we're earning 0% instead of the assumed. And we've had years where we've earned negative, so it's not unreasonable to think about a year where we earn 0% instead of our assumed return. And you see that orange line, because of the five-year asset smoothing, it starts growing for about 5 years before leveling off. Well, the glide path, because we've built a bit of a buffer coming down in a measured fashion over time, it doesn't have to do that same. We have extra assets built up from those contribution rates. And so as the glide path comes down, you can see it remains stable over that time where the orange line bounces back up for 5 years. And so that's just one illustration of the value of, we think, of coming down gradually, still providing rate relief for the employers over time, but doing it in a fashion where you can mitigate future negative events that might raise contribution rates back up in the future. So this is just illustrating that. There's a lot of lines going on this page, so I apologize that there's a lot going on. But the orange solid line is the projection without the new policy we're talking about, with an investment loss in 2033. The blue circles is the glide path that we're proposing with an investment loss in 2033, just to see what would happen under those two solid lines, the orange line versus the blue circle solid line. And so that's where you see that the, even though the contribution rate is higher for a few years because you're bringing it down gradually, it comes down in a dependable fashion and it doesn't bounce back up. That's really what I'm trying to get across here with this. So to put more numbers to what we're proposing, and I have to remind the board, we had to remind ourselves, we have many cost groups in this plan, and we actually deal with unfunded liability on a cost group basis. We can't just do it for the plan as a whole. And the general cost groups look very different than the safety cost groups, which generally have higher benefits and have higher unfunded liabilities. And so we have to deal with them in a bit of different ways when we're talking about some kind of strategy like this. So we're breaking this up into two sections. First, we're talking about the general cost groups. So this page in particular is talking about general. And we're trying to say this is actually what we're proposing to do as contribution rates decrease. So you can see number one says, if the contribution rate decreases just a little bit, just keep the contribution the same as last year. So it's exactly the same, it's flat, it doesn't move at all. But if, and so that threshold is 2% of pay. If it's less than 2% of pay, just keep it the same. But in a year where it decreases by more than 2% of pay, drop it 1% a year as we go down. And by the way, if we ever hit full funding, then start accelerating that and drop it 2% a year, because we've made it to full funding and we don't need to be as slow in the dropping of the contribution rate. And this is, again, just the contribution rate on the unfunded liability. We're not dealing with the normal cost. That stays even in surplus. We still have to pay the normal cost. And the reason why it's only 1% of pay is because our general cost groups, actually, the contribution rate isn't that high. So I'll show you an example. This is one of our large cost groups on the general side. It's at about 9% of pay. So the unfunded liability contribution rate isn't all that high, especially you'll see compared to the safety plans that we'll look at next. And so after a couple years, that 9% of pay has this major drop where it goes all the way down to about 4.5%. And then it stays there for a number of years before declining again. And so the glide path policy, again, is the blue circle, the solid blue circle, where we say, you know, come down gradually over time instead of all at once. And you can see the measured approach to coming down. And similar to what I showed you before, I think the value is really shown when you have a negative event. Again, this is more of a risk management tool. And so here's that same negative event where in 2033, we have 1 year of the assets returning zero instead of the assumed. And so the orange line, which is the baseline scenario, it came down from 9 to about 4.5, and then it goes all the way up to about 8 based on that 1 year of investment return less than expected. It's not even negative, but it's less than expected. It's a 0% return year. Whereas the glide path gets to stay stable pretty much the whole way because, again, we built up a buffer related to that glide path. So this is an illustration on the general cost group side. And again, we'll take questions on all of this very soon. We just have a couple more slides to talk about. On the safety side, like I said, there are larger unfunded liability payments. So if you only go down 1% a year, if you're at 40% unfunded liability payment, it's going to take a really long time to get down to zero. So we didn't want to do that on the safety side. We needed to have a way to accelerate it faster. And so we looked at 3% threshold before reducing the contribution rate. If the contribution rate just decreases a little bit, leave it alone. But if it decreases by more than 3%, then we go down 3% a year instead of just the 1% on the general side. And if we hit surplus, we accelerate that and even go down 8% a year. We have a cost group that's, I think, 60% of pay on the unfunded side. So it's quite high up there. And we didn't want to have it stuck up there for a long time. So 3% of payroll a year as costs are decreasing. And then we can do 8% if the plan hits surplus to accelerate that downward. So what does that look like? Here's one of our safety cost groups. Again, the orange line is under the status quo. What would happen? We have large contribution drop projections from maybe 37, 38% of pay all the way down to about 12 in a few years. That's a very large drop in employer contribution rate. The glide path, again, with that 3% a year, does it in a more measured fashion. You can see towards the end, at about 2035, it accelerates down to 8% a year, because at that point, the plan is fully funded. So again, I'm trying to just be transparent on what this potential strategy does altogether. Similar to what we've modeled before, we said, well, what happens if there's an investment loss compared to the assumed in 2033? For this plan, for the safety plan, which was at about 12.5% of pay in 2032, it ramps all the way back up to about 18-19% of pay from the single year investment loss, whereas the glide path gets to continue doing what exactly it was planned to do originally, because again, we've built out a buffer from the contribution rate. So that's the illustrations, both general and safety. I have a conclusion slide to wrap up, but let me just pause there, since this is the end of the illustrations, just for board discussion or questions.
Yeah, are there questions? I know I have one, but any board questions? Well, it's a quiet group this morning. What if we just did nothing, in the sense of we manage year to year without a policy, without a glide path? In other words, the status quo.
So in all my modeling that you've seen on the screen, the orange line is the nothing line. It's a status quo, no changes. So that's what we were trying to illustrate. The consideration here is, in a couple years, for most of the cost groups, there's significant declines in contribution rates. And again, all else equal, a decline in contribution rate is not a bad thing. It means that the unfunded liability is going down and some old layers are being paid off. So we're not here to say that we always want employers to pay more no matter what the situation. So that's not what we're saying here. But what we're saying is, if you drop it significantly all in 1 or 2 years, it can lead to bounce backs from whether it's an assumption change or whether we have a bad investment year or something happens in the future that can cause that rate to bounce back up. So if you bring it down gradually over time, you can build up a bit of a buffer. So if any of those things happen, you already have that buffer in place, and you can continue to bring the contribution rate down gradually over time, even with some kind of negative event that happens. So it's a risk management perspective that helps strengthen the fund in a strong funding position and minimizes volatility on the employer contribution rate.
So a driver in your analysis is the ability of the plan to pay benefits, right? It's got to be an element of this. I'm making that assumption.
It's a driver in the consideration is to help minimize potential volatility in the plan sponsor's payments, if that's right. What you're getting at.
So the way we're structured, we currently have 3 years of benefit payments that are assured through a liquidity component of our plan that we debate from time to time about whether we should have 2 years or 3 years, but we are structured so that we can weather a 36-month storm and pay benefits and not have to impair long-term assets. Does that factor into this analysis at all?
It's tangent to this, but we're less concerned with, well, let me take a step back. If the cash flows drop dramatically from lower contribution rates, you can see it right here on the slide. When you look from 2026 to 2027 to 2028, contributions drop by more than half for the cost group that's shown here. If the contributions coming in drop by more than half, our benefit payments going out to our retirees don't change. In fact, they're just going to go up over time.
Yeah, they're going to go up. Yeah.
So if contributions are dropping and benefit payments are ramping up, that changes the liquidity profile of the plan. And so that analysis that you're talking about of having 24 or 36 months worth of assets to be able to pay, that may drop significantly if we're receiving half the contributions we used to be receiving. So this glide path allows time to, even from that perspective, from the benefit payments perspective, to build time into how do we need to adjust our portfolio to account for taking in much less contributions than we're going to pay out in benefits. So it does affect that. But I'm not here saying we're scared we're going to run out of money. That's not the point here. The point is, how do we manage the fact that contribution rates are declining in what I would call a prudent and way that is educated from a risk management perspective? How do we manage this more purposefully over time? That strengthens the funding of the fund. At the same time, it minimizes contribution rate volatility.
So I'm just trying to
get my head around the, what are really the options or the alternatives in the face of how the plan actually functions.
Yep.
And it seems to me, absent a policy, absent a glide path, absent anything else, we would do it annually, yes? In other words, we would think about it annually?
No, that's generally not how the funding policies work for the plan. We set the funding policies in place, and then, for example, when we do our annual evaluation, it is based upon the board-approved funding policies of the past. And generally, we review the funding policies at every 3 years or 4 years. So it's generally, we set them to be evergreen and long-term. So we don't just, in every actuarial evaluation, adjust funding policies for what's going on that year. It's more to be proactive and look ahead of time on what do we need to do in order to fund the plan in a way that we think is best.
All right, any other questions, John?
Just one more way to respond, I think, to Scott's question. Right, is that we are becoming, if we adopt this, more conservative.
That's true.
Right?
This is conservative.
Quickly, at the blue line versus the red line, we're going to have higher contributions. Again, with that fact pattern in that modeling, and that's a fairly natural one. And I think, for the most part, it's positive. My reaction is it's a positive change in terms of being better able to make those payments in future years.
It's a happy problem to have.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions from board members? I'm not hearing any, so please continue.
Okay, so I think just two slides to wrap it up. The conclusion of what I'm talking about here and what Mr. Phillips said is absolutely true. What we're talking about here is being conservative. Again, it's not withholding rate decreases from the employer, but it's bringing them in gradually over time. That's the goal. It's not to say you can never have a rate decrease, but you can do it in a more measured, dependable way over time. So that's the recommendation that we're talking about here, to build in a contribution volatility management method within the funding policy that does what we illustrated in those graphs. And just to put it very specifically, we actually took the funding policy as it currently stands. There's a board funding policy document. And we redlined that, and we said, well, here's what it would look like if we were to build this into the funding policy. As I mentioned before, there's three normal elements of a funding policy. There's the cost method, there's the asset smoothing, and there's the amortization. That's already in the board policy. And like I said, in the GFOA document, it recommends putting in a fourth policy or a fourth method into the funding policy, which is preparing for surplus and how to manage these declining contribution rates. And so that's what we're proposing. So there's a red line version of the funding policy where we put in possible edits to the funding policy for the board review and approval. And this slide is basically detailing out what, I didn't want to go over all of the red lines line by line here at the booth, but this slide is detailing the core elements of what is changing in the funding policy if it were to be adopted. And so you can see for the general cost groups, when the unfunded liability decreases, if it just decreases a little bit less than 2%, keep it the same as the last year. But if it decreases by more percent, go down 1% a year. And if we ever hit surplus, then go down 2% a year because we can get closer to, we can go faster towards zero. And again, the unfunded liability cost groups for the general side, the unfunded liability rate's not even that high right now. It's, depending on cost group, maybe 5 to 10% of pay, a little bit over 10, but it's not 20, 30, 40% of pay. On the safety side, that what I just said is not true. It's much higher, so we allow for more decreases in the contribution rates if this policy were adopted. You can see it go down 3% a year when there's significant declines in the unfunded liability rate. And if we hit surplus, go down 8% a year. So we can really march towards 0% on the unfunded liability contribution rate. Again, there's still a normal cost. That normal cost is not going away, but this is just the unfunded portion of the contribution rate. So this is, in a nutshell, what is being proposed in the funding policy red line. But this is my last slide. So, yes, please.
So the proposed 2.2 for general and 3.A for safety, is that more of an industry standard or is it more plan specific?
Yeah, that's a great question. So as I mentioned, this is what I'd call emerging best practice. It's just started to be implemented in the last couple of years. And those two papers I mentioned were just published about 2 years ago. And so we do have other plans in California that are considering something like this. And every plan that has adopted a glide path type strategy has been a little bit different than the last. And that has to do with where the current unfunded liability is, and if there's a big difference between the general cost groups and the safety cost groups. And so there's different factors that we take into account when we're doing our analysis. And we definitely had a lot of internal discussions about what would be appropriate. Then we met with staff and talked to staff about what we thought would be appropriate. So there was a lot of analysis that was quite plan specific going into this. The general concept is applied, has been applied to multiple plans, but the specific line items that you're talking about here is plan specific.
Well, I asked that. I'm just wondering if it locks us into these, or I mean, are these numbers firm, or does it give us a little more wiggle room to adjust in the margins?
So this is our recommendation based on looking on the analysis would be these numbers. The board certainly has the power to
say. Candace Anderson is now exiting.
The board certainly has the power to say, we don't like these numbers. We'd like you to change them to something else. So it's, we're not the final say here, you are. So in that sense, you're not locked in. But once we put this in the policy, that would be what we would follow.
Yeah, and just so folks know, it's probably obvious, but item 5 is the consideration of the policy itself. Item 4 is the presentation item to discuss it. So, and I'm fine with us getting into the details in Q&A because in a sense, these are connected items, right? So, Jerry, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, one of the tools that we created, that you briefly alluded to, which was an attempt, I think successful attempt to mitigate these ups and downs of volatility, was to recognize gains and losses over 5 years.
Investment gains and losses. Yes, exactly right.
So to what extent is this duplicative, or is it just a further effort to try and fine tune this, or is it a big change? Because I thought that was a big change and it seemed to likely be successful.
Yes. So the asset smoothing method, which actually almost all plans in the United States have some kind of asset smoothing method, and I think 5 years is the most standard. So we're right in line with all plans there. That is specifically dealing with investment volatility because that causes the most volatility in the plan. So if I go back to, for example, this example that we use, the asset smoothing method, we're modeling out what happens if there's a year of 0% return instead of the assumed. What would happen? You can see the orange line, the orange solid square line, in 2033 is when the bad investment year happens. Over the next 5 years, you see this smoothing in.
Candace Anderson is now joining.
See the smoothing in of the investment lines.
You might want to mute whoever's on line, but I'm sure.
Thank you.
Go right ahead.
So you see how the orange line bounces up or glides up or whatever you want to call it, goes up over 5 years. That's the smoothing in of that investment loss. So that still helps to not recognize it all at once. But we're actually dealing with a tangent issue, which is the contribution rate itself has old unfunded liability layers. And those unfunded liability layers, when they drop off, you're going to see them drop dramatically. And there's some cases where we have credit layers where we had a gain in a year will drop off, and they could even bump up the contribution rate a little bit. But what you see here in 2026 to 27, 27 to 28, that has nothing to do with investment volatility. That's just the fact that the contribution rate is going down significantly all from 1 year to the next and then the following year as well. And so we're trying to get a little more stability in how we decline the contribution rate over time in case something like investment return or an assumption change or something else happens that increases liability in the future. So it is tangentially related, but I wouldn't call it redundant because we're dealing with two separate things. One is directly on the contribution rate as a result of layers that have been set up long in the past.
Thank you.
Are there other questions or comments from board members? How about on the phone group? Candace or Mike, any questions or comments?
I'm very supportive of us moving in this direction. Having seen a lot of volatility, my time on it, I think this is a really wise direction to move in.
Great. Thank you, Candace. All right. It's like a healthy thing to do. Any final thoughts, wrap-up comments? Or
yeah, as far as presentation goes, we can conclude our presentation there. Like I said, this flows into the actual red line funding policy, which we can certainly talk about more as desired. But I'll turn it back to the board at this point.
Okay.